Welcome to America's Top Rebbetzins. In the merit of this class, may Hashem watch over all the Jewish people and give enormous strength to the IDF soldiers, including Eden bat Eliza, Eden bat Orin, Eilat bat Rachel, and Einav ben Pnina, and also Refuah Shleima for Tamara bat Elka. Please click on the subscribe button to subscribe to us on the America's Top Rebbetzins YouTube page, or click follow to follow us on your podcasting app so that you are the first to know when an inspiring new episode is posted. Today, I am happy to welcome Rabbanit Shena Goldberg. Rabbanit Shena is a contributing editor at Derech Chacha. She is also a highly experienced teacher who holds an undergraduate degree in Judaic Studies from Stern College. She pursued a master's degree in secondary Jewish education at Ezrieli while simultaneously studying Talmud and Halacha at GPATS Graduate Program in Advanced Talmudic Studies. She's a scholar. So Rabbanit Shena is a Nishmat Yoetzer Halacha. I'm sorry, she Nishmat Yoetzet Halacha, a frequent blogger for the Times of Israel and the author of the book, What Do You Really Want? Trust and Fear in Decision-Making at Life's Crossroads in Everyday Living. Wow, thank you so, so much for being here. You really have done so much. Please tell us more about yourself and what you do.
Thank you so much for having me on to discuss this important mitzvah. I was actually laughing when you first reached out because I don't live in America and I'm not a Rebbetzin, but I did grow up the daughter of a Rebbetzin. My mother, Rebbetzin Abby Lerner, was the Rebbetzin of the Young Israel Great Neck for 45 years. And so much, I think, of what I'm going to share today has been shaped by her influence. So in her scoop, happy to be here. I made Aliyah in 2011 from New Jersey, and there I taught in my Ayinot Yeshiva High School, and I worked as a Yoetzet Halacha in shuls in Englewood and Teaneck. And since making Aliyah, I'm privileged to work as a Mashgicha Ruchanit and to teach Halacha and Tanakh in Migdal Luz, which is a Beit Midrash for women. It's the sister school of Yeshivat Har Tzion, better known as Gush. And I live here in Gush Etzion in Alon Shva, which is around a half hour south of Yerushalayim. I'm married to Judah. I have five children. And one thing that's also very important for me to add is that in addition to enjoying writing, I'm blessed to do some editing for the website you mentioned called Derech Chacha, which is a website that was started and directed by my close friend and colleague, Rabbanit Lori Novick. And the goal of that website is to really address issues of women and mitzvot and halacha, and to try to really lay out and explain the halacha and the hashkafa behind it in a way that's thorough and sensitive, and that's also speaking directly to women. So today, so much, I think, of what I'm going to draw on heavily is from that material that Lori wrote up and that I was, privileged to edit. And I definitely encourage anyone who wants to learn more about this topic or to see the actual sources to check out the website, which is either drechaha.org or womenandmitzvot.org, because I think it really tries to, again, it's not a new halacha. We have years and years of generations of halacha, but I think speaking about it in a woman's voice directly to women is something that's a little bit of a different tone than sometimes.
Right, exactly. And that's what we're really going to get into it today. I'm actually really excited because I've been wanting to do this topic for a very long time. So today we're going to be talking about a beautiful mitzvah, as you mentioned, that has a deep and profound effect on a Jewish woman. However, this very same mitzvah also presents some real challenges that we are also going to talk about. So the mitzvah is hair covering. According to Jewish law, a married Jewish woman must cover her hair. And many women have seen huge positive transformations in their lives from keeping this mitzvah. But at the same time, they also struggle with it. It's not an easy mitzvah. Women who have beautiful, thick, shiny hair sometimes find it difficult to cover their hair under a wig or a hair wrap because their hair is so, so beautiful. I mean, covering their hair in the heat of summer also, is another challenge because when you cover your hair, it's also you get hot. You just feel like taking off your hat or your shaitel or whatever it is, to cool down. But, together we're going to explore this mitzvah and we're going to uncover its beauty while also taking an honest look at the challenges of hair covering. So let's start at the beginning. Can you please share with us where the mitzvah comes from for married Jewish women to cover their hair?
So the answer to that question is actually quite complicated, which consistently surprises people because there's actually no one single pasuk. There's no one single verse in the Torah that clearly commands a married woman to cover her hair, right? It would be so much easier if it just said, like Yomer Elokim, and then we had a very clear tzivoy, a very clear obligation. But the halachic obligation that we're familiar with today for women to cover their hair is actually based on three different components. Okay, the first one is derived from Parshat Naso and Sefer Bamidbar and the ordeal of the Sota. A Sota is a married woman who is unfortunately strongly suspected of infidelity, but who continues to deny it. And as part of a process that the Torah commands her to go through in order to potentially clear her name, the Kohen is told to uncover the woman's head. And so the pasuk reads that the Torah the Kohen stands her up before Hashem, upara et rosh ha'isha, which means in translation, he uncovers the woman's head. And then the Gemara on that pasuk, the Gemara in Ketubot, derives from here that we see that there's a Torah level, a Doraita obligation for a Jewish woman's head to be covered. So that's part one, okay? The fact that most poskim agree that based on this source, according to the Torah, there's an element that is telling us that a married woman's head has to be covered. Now, before I move on to part two, I'll just say that I have yet to teach this topic over 20 years of teaching where the women who are teaching didn't stop me at this point and say, wait, what? That's the main source for, you know, women to cover her hair? Like, how do they even know that upara at rosh hasha means uncover the woman's head? In modern Hebrew, upara means to loosen her hair, you know, like let's say to take out your braids. So
okay.
How do they even know that? And even if we're going to accept that that's what it means, this is the source, like this is a story. How does this translate into an obligation? So I do just want to stop and say that I personally understand those questions and I relate to them and I understand the difficulty. But for me, when I'm teaching halacha, even though like you and I may not have read the pasuk in the way that Chazal and the Gemara are understanding it, I come at it from an insider of like, is this, if this is the tradition that Chazal had, and this is how for years people have understood this pasuk to mean that they were uncovering her head, so then I'm here to explain to you how the halacha developed from that point.
Yes.
Okay. Even though I could understand why someone may already, you know, say, well, that's like, it's funny that that's the source, but that's part one. Part one is that Torah level obligation. Part two is that that same Gemara in Ketubot then goes on to say that on the Torah level, a woman may just have an obligation to have something on her head. Because it says upara et rosh ha'isha, that they uncovered her head. There's no mention there about hair. There's not even a mention of how much of her head was covered. But the Gemara says there's another level on top of that basic Torah level obligation called the Dat Yehudit. The Dat Yehudit or Dat Yehudis, depending on your way of pronouncing words, is the customs of modesty and tzniut that Jewish women have accepted upon themselves. And the Gemara says that there's a Dat Yehudit obligation that requires a woman to cover more of her head and hair than the Torah obligation does. Okay, so that's the second component. And then the third level, part three, is that in a separate Gemara in Brachot, there's a discussion about what parts of a body are considered nakedness, the Gemara calls nakedness erva, and must be covered on ourselves or on those we see when we're davening. And in that context, Rav Sheshet says that a woman's hair is also considered erva. The quote is Se'ar be'isha erva, the hair of a woman is erva. What's interesting is that most authorities are in agreement that the obligation of women's head covering still derives primarily from the psukim in the Torah about the sota and secondarily from the dat yehudi obligation. And it is not that we cover hair because Rav Sheshet said that hair is straight up nakedness. Because if that was true, then all single women would have to cover their hair, you know, like, so it can't be that hair is straight up nakedness. Or if that was true, then you and I wouldn't be able to sit here with shaved toes on our head the same way that if I have to cover nakedness, I couldn't cover nakedness with a picture of nakedness.
Right.
You know, clearly, like,
right.
Hair is something different, and we're going to need to understand how that erva nakedness element factors in. But in any case, just to summarize, let's say that these three elements come together and result in the halachic obligation today for married women to cover not just their head, but also their hair. What makes it interesting is that the Torah and even the Gemara don't detail for us what this means concretely, like how much of her hair and what does that mean and with what, you know? So that's why we're going to see there's such a range of interpretations and opinions about how much hair actually needs to be covered and how to cover it and how exactly we fulfill this obligation.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting. We're going to talk about this today because it really is like a source of contention amongst many, many groups. So this is very interesting. But so based on your experiences with Jewish women, can you please share with us maybe like a story or two about women who have really, really seen miracles and transformation in their lives once they took upon themselves the mitzvah of actually covering their hair with whatever they chose, with whether it's a hat or a shetel or a tichel or a scarf, however they chose, just women who have fulfilled the mitzvah in some way.
Okay, so I don't know if you're going to love my answer to this. You could tell me what you think, but I personally try not to engage in looking for miracles or transformations as a result of doing mitzvot. And I'll tell you why, because I feel like we don't really understand the world on that level and how it works, like cause and effect. Like, I mean, we could try to imagine that we do, but then we get into all those questions of like tzadik v'ra'lo and why do bad things happen to good people. So in general, I try to stay away from like attributing like specific effects from people's actions because it doesn't always line up. And I think that sometimes, even though there's an appeal in that, and I understand and I relate to the question in terms of the appeal, but I think that there's a flip side, which is the danger in it, because someone may take on something, right? Imagine I tell an amazing story about hair covering, and then someone takes it on, hoping that that will lead to some miracle, and then it doesn't. And then that could either leave them feeling very disappointed or frustrated, or sometimes even turned off or resentful or angry at Hashem. And then, like, it could have the opposite effect of what we're looking to do here. So I personally prefer to focus on the amazing commitment that I've seen so many women have to their avodas Hashem and to
Okay.
leading halachic lives and to drawing inspiration from that, including to their commitment to hair covering. So in that vein, I do want to share one particular story, which has always really inspired me, which is that I said earlier that it's hard for many women to understand and even accept the pasuk from the Sota story as the source of this mitzvah.
Yes.
But I personally know a woman, a really, really top professional, really successful in her field, who is sitting in shul one Shabbos, following along Parshas Naso, and she heard this pasuk. And she literally jumped up and she ran over to the Rebbetzin and she said, "Is this the source? Like the fact that the Kohen uncovers her head and she's a married woman, is this the source for hair covering?" And the Rebbetzin said, "Yes, indeed it is." And she said, "I can't believe this. I didn't think it was a real mitzvah. I kind of thought it was like some rush stringency that only like really, really religious women do." And when she heard that it was indeed something that had like a Torah source, she literally went out the next day and bought a beautiful shetel and started covering her hair from then on. And I found this story incredible because the field that she was in was not something that like naturally would lend itself to that in terms of she's interacting with a lot of, non-Jews and not something that would just be taken lightly. And it made me think so much about hair covering as a symbol of identity to ourselves and to others with regard to our commitment to halacha and to the fact that like sometimes we're willing to do something even if it's not pashut and it's not easy because we feel like we want to belong to a certain community of God-fearing women and we want to be in that. And if this is an obligation, I want to be committed to that. So I definitely see women who find a lot of meaning in that, of like, I'm going to take on the whole package, even if it doesn't always speak to me. I also see women finding incredible meaning in hair covering as a proud symbol of the fact that they're married. Similar to
Right.
wanting to wear a wedding ring or engagement ring, and like I connect. I'm part of a couple, and then and there's another half, and I connect, and I want everybody to know that I'm a married woman. So I see a lot of meaning in that, and I've also seen women who connect to it as a symbol of dignity. Maybe connected to like I'm married and I'm an adult, and this is a symbol of dignity. Not so different from like how the Queen of England never left her home without a hat, and other members of the royal family also, they always wear hats in public. So I definitely find a lot of meaning and a lot of connection. But I personally, don't feel comfortable going to that, like, and therefore they were zocha to see all these things in their life, because I don't know if that was because the hair covering or because of all the gemilut chesed that they do. So I hope that's okay
Yeah,
as
no,
an
it's actually a
answer.
really good point. Nobody has ever brought that up, but I really appreciate you bringing that up because it is a really, really good point. And also, people do have their own personal reasons for covering their hair, and I really appreciate the story that you shared because here was a woman who didn't know. She really just generally didn't know that you know, the Torah commanded her to cover her hair. When she found out that that was indeed the case, that she was indeed commanded to cover her hair as a married Jewish woman, and that she went out and did that. That, you're right. I agree. It's really, really inspirational and it's beautiful. So I do appreciate that. That's beautiful.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times if we are able to educate people from positive places and from empowering places, they're often able to commit to more than maybe we would have expected of them, or they would have even expected from themselves.
100%. 100%. So now that we have a full understanding about where this mitzvah comes from and how to keep it properly, I wanted to talk about the various types of hair coverings available for women. So in my community, some women wear shaitels, which are full wigs that cover all of a woman's hair. And people also wear something called a fall, which mostly covers a woman's hair, but leaves some parts uncovered, usually toward the top. And people wear baseball caps, they wear hats, other women wear head wraps and scarves. So can you please talk to us about these different types of head coverings available to women, and maybe why one woman would choose to wear this and another one would choose to wear that?
Yeah, it is so true that we really see so many different ways that women cover their hair. And then like when you make aliyahs, I do, so like all of a sudden you're like, whoa, there's all these other ways. And even you see like the baseball hat is very common in America because like baseball caps are common here in Israel. Like you'll see these wraps and you're like, wow, we're in the Middle East, you know, there's like all this like East influence and all those things factor in. So what I want to first do is take a step back and explain halachically why there's such a range of practices and different customs in different communities. And the reason that I want to do that, why it's so important to me, because I really think regardless of what any of us do for ourselves or decide to do, understanding the range could really help us respect one another.
Yes.
And know that even if we see a woman who's doing something different, that's not my individual or my community's practice, it often could have halachic backing. And that's true from both, you know, on both sides. Instead of like mocking someone who's doing something really stringent and being like, oh, that's so ridiculous, where did she get that from? And be like, wow, that's really based in a certain approach. Or someone who I think isn't halachic or doesn't care, I can understand, no, she's actually a very halachic person who thinks of herself as very committed, but she follows a different shita, a different posik, a different way of understanding. Okay, so I'm going to try to lay out the range as I see it.
Okay.
It's not going to be easy to summarize what takes me hours to teach in in a few sentences. I hope I could do this justice. And if at any point you feel like, you know, I'm not being clear enough or something needs to be clarified, please just let me know.
Thank you.
Okay. So on one end, we have the Zohar. The Zohar says that based on Kabbalistic ideas, that it's praiseworthy that a married woman's hair be covered fully at all times and in all settings. And this jives with the Gemara in Yoma, which praises Kimchit. Kimchit was a woman who the Gemara says the walls of her home never saw her hair. You know, so you say, well, how did that work in the shower? Maybe because they had outhouses, you know? So today, like, I'm not sure that worked. But anyway, the Gemara tells us that the walls of her house never saw her hair and that she was maybe rewarded for that. And I think that there are women who follow this, and the women who follow this, like, they will cover all their hair, like in even in their homes, and sometimes even when they sleep, you know, they'll put on a snood to sleep or something. And it's, again, it's not because like, oh, crazy and machmir or whatever, it's because they really follow the Zohar, follow this Gemara in Yoma, that there's something praiseworthy about having your hair covered at all times. Okay, so I want to give, you know, place to that opinion. There's also the opinion of the Chasam Sofer, who writes that in public a woman must wear two separate coverings. And the reason that he says that is because he says, remember, we had those two level of obligations. We have a Torah level obligation. And then on top of that, we have a dat yehudi. Now, most commentaries understand that as the Torah requires something more minimal, and the dat yehudi asks for something bigger or to cover something larger. But the Chasam Sofer actually understands it as two different obligations, two different coverings. And therefore, you'll see in some Hasidic communities, for example, where you'll see women wearing like a sheitel with a little hat on top,
yes,
or a sheitel with a little kerchief on top. And that's coming from the Chasam Sofer. And in addition, like the Zohar, the Chasam Sofer also thinks that even in the privacy of one's own home, even if it's just the family, a woman's hair needs to be fully covered. She doesn't need an additional covering in her own home, but her hair needs to be covered. Okay, so that those are two opinions that have, you know, real basis, real they're coming from specific approaches. Moving on, I think that some of the differences that we see with regard to how much hair you'll see is covered in different communities connects to different ways that Poskim understood how the Gemara in Bracha, which that's the Gemara where it says that hair is erva, hair is nakedness, how that fits into the Gemara in Ketubot that talks about the Torah level obligation and the dot UD. Like what do we do with the fact that hair is nakedness? So the Mishnah Brura, the Chafetz Chaim, you know, a huge posek that we all, know is very substantial in our halachic lives today. So the Mishnah Brura seems to understand that because a married woman has an obligation to cover her hair, like we learned in Ketubot, everyone agrees that's the primary obligation from Ketubot, the Torah, the Dot Yud. But he thinks that once she has that obligation, just by virtue of the fact that there's an obligation, once she gets married, all of her hair is now automatically considered nakedness, meaning because she's supposed to have to cover it when she's married, the virtue of the obligation to cover it, and the fact that it's now supposed to be covered in itself turns it into an area of nakedness. And he says it becomes objective nakedness, just like a woman's thigh or just like a woman's body, which we're told is erva, again, just because it has to be covered. So first of all, that explains why single women don't have to cover their hair, because the erva only kicks in once there's an obligation to cover it. And that's only when she's married. Okay, but once she's married and there's an obligation to cover it, now it's erva. Now, if you think that just by virtue of getting married, your hair becomes nakedness and, you know, it has to be covered, so then you're going to think that all your hair has to be covered. And indeed, the Mishnah Brura paskins that to cover your head today means to cover all of your hair. And he thinks that the only hair that would be permissible to show are like, you know, the little flyaway hairs that you just can't get in. Like, they're just the ones on the perimeters that, like, they just can't be contained. But otherwise, he thinks all your hair has to be covered. That's the Mishnah Brura. And I think many, many women that we know in many communities have basically adapted that. And that's why they think all hair has to be covered, even though, again, they're not going to worry about one little hair that's peeking out of the snood or something like that. Rav Moshe Feinstein, a huge Gadol Hador, you know, posek in the 20th century in America, who also many people hold by, he thinks that even if hair takes on a quality of erva after marriage and it all of a sudden becomes, you know, something that's considered like nakedness, because in that same Gemara in Brachot, where it said se'ar be'isha erva, that a woman's hair is erva, there's another statement that says tefach be'isha erva, that only if a fist worth of something that's considered nakedness is exposed is that problematic. So he says, so then we could say that if hair is considered erva, you're still allowed to expose up to a tefach worth, up to a fist worth of hair, okay? Which Rav Moshe Feinstein says is about 64 to 108 centimeters, like, squared. And that's why you will see many very halachic and committed women who cover all of their hair with a hat or with a scarf or with a shetel, like a headband fall, but they still leave a little bit of hair showing. Right? So they'll either, if they have a headband fall, they'll have a little bit in the front, or if they're wearing a hat, they'll have like a little bit of hair sticking out from the back, or if they're wearing a mitpachat, you know, when I wear a mitpachat, I have a little tiny bit of hair showing in the front, because it's like they think it's okay to show some hair as long as they're careful not to show more than a tefach. Okay. So that explains that custom. But not everybody understands the connection between the Gemaras the way the Mishnah Brura did. And the Aruch HaShulchan, which was his contemporary, he agrees that the primary reason that a woman covers her hair is because of the Torah and Dat Yudit obligations from Ketubot. Everyone thinks that. But he does not think, like the Mishnah Brura did, that that obligation on its own, like, poof, automatically, when a woman gets married, turns her hair into erva. He doesn't think just the fact that there's an obligation makes your hair now consider nakedness. Rather, when the Gemara in Brachot says that hair is considered nakedness, it's because since married women as a group typically cover their hair, why do they cover their hair? Because of the obligation from the Torah and Dat Yudit. So because now all the married women cover their hair, then hair becomes something that's not usually seen. And that's what makes it considered nakedness, because it would be weird to see something that's usually seen. It becomes a typically covered place, right? The same way I remember when I was first married, and I had a friend over for Shabbos, and she was dating someone, and they came for Shabbos, and we went to sleep after the meal or went to our room, and they were sitting on the couch schmoozing, and then I realized I forgot my book in the living room. So of course I made sure that I was dressed and whatever, and I came out and I see them looking at me, and all of a sudden I realized I had forgotten to put my hat back on. So you feel like naked, and then all of a sudden I'm like, okay, I knew this guy 4 months ago. He knows what my hair looks like. He sees a picture on the wall from my wedding. It's not exactly like I'm naked, but the fact that my hair has now become a usually covered place, and that all married women's head has become a usually covered place, that's what the Aruch HaShulchan thinks makes it nakedness. Now, there's a huge difference between them, because while the Mishnah Brewer thinks that part of the reason you now have to cover your hair is because the hair became arva when you got married, the Aruch HaShulchan doesn't think that. He doesn't think we are covering our hair because it's arva. He thinks we cover our hair because there's an obligation to cover our hair. And yes, that effectuates the fact that the hair as a group becomes erva. But what does this mean practically? It means that unlike the Mishnah Brewer, who says, well, of course you have to cover all your hair, it's nakedness, there's going to be many different authorities who think that, who says you have to cover all your hair? Let's talk about what the Torah level or dat yudit obligation is to cover it. And an example of someone like that is there's a Rav who was here in Israel and passed away a few years ago, Rav Nachum Rabinovich. And he was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Hezder Yeshiva in Ma'ale Adumim, Birkat Moshe. And he says that, again, the a married woman's chief obligation to cover her hair is the Gemara in Ketubot, and it's not that erva is the source of the obligation. And given this, he doesn't think that there's a reason to think about, is there only a tefach that's exposed, only a fist worth? Because the tefach measurement is only relevant if you think we're talking about nakedness. So he quotes the Rashba, who's also quoted by the Rama and others, that the halacha acknowledges that for all of time, it was normal for women to have some hair outside of their head covering. That's not something from our time. Like the Rashba talks about that. And therefore, he concludes that the basic halacha is that someone has to cover, a woman has to cover most of the hair of her head, but it's permissible to leave out some without measuring if it's only a tefach. He doesn't give a specific measurement because he says that how much she's allowed to expose is dependent on kind of the community norms of the people who are Shomer Torah and Mitzvot where she lives. And therefore, that already gives room for women who, let's say, wear a baseball hat and leave out what seems to be more than just, a couple of centimeters, or leave out a little ponytail, or leave out whatever it is, because he doesn't think that there's an obligation that to cover their hair because it's erva. And I'll also share that in a conversation that I had with Rabbi Nate Esty Rosenberg, who's the head of the Beit Midrash where I teach. So she was talking to me about her father's position. Her father was Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who is the son-in-law of Rav Soloveitchik, and was the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Har Tzion. And she told me that her father took a similar overall approach, that he rejected the idea of erva being the source of the obligation, and therefore he saw the tefach measurement as irrelevant. Instead, he said that the requirement is to convey the overall impression from every angle that one's hair is covered. Now, she said when she would say, well, what does that mean? He would say, we know what it means to cover something. Like when a child calls me from bed and says, Ima, come cover me, I know that he doesn't mean his toes. I know what it means to cover something. So she said that her father said, yes, you need to cover your hair. You have to cover it. It has to look covered. It has to be covered. But again, this position leaves room for those halachic women, of whom I know many, who cover the vast majority of their hair, but they definitely leave out more than a tefach, either in the front or it hanging in the back, or sometimes there's, now a style in Israel of like a mipacha where there's like a little bit peeking out in the middle. So all of it, or a little messy bun or something like that. All of that would be consistent with these poskim who say that, again, that you have to cover most of your hair, if not the majority of it, but you don't have to worry that there's only up to a tefach that's showing. Okay, and finally, I also just want to say that beyond this, especially where I live in Israel, you will now see a practice of there are women who are wearing like only a narrow like headband or a thin strip of like a scarf encircling the head, and that's become pretty popular. So I want to just give context for that, because a woman with this type of covering, she might be relying on a minority opinion that maybe covering isn't obligatory beyond what's like common custom, and she may be interpreting custom leniently. I have heard some people attribute or justify this practice based on what we said earlier from Rav Rabinovich, who made oral remarks that maybe it's permissible if this becomes the common practice. But I also just want to give context that it's very possible that many of the women who do that have the misconception that there's nothing more to the obligation of hair covering than signifying in some way that you're married. And certainly in Israel, like when you see someone with a headband, everyone knows, oh, she's a married woman, you know, and maybe they think that that's all that's necessary. It may also be that they view head covering as more of like a social thing to show that you're religious. Like, I want to show that I'm a religious woman, and the headband is enough to do that. So the prevalent view, at least how I see it among halachic authorities, is that the Torah obligation and the Dat Yudit obligation seem to require at least the majority of the head and the hair to be covered. And that's what I would encourage. Even if I teach a spectrum of opinions, I usually try to, you know, say that if you're trying to look to do what's the lechatchila halacha, I think the majority of hair seems to be that. But I also want to make it very clear that I would never, ever want to discourage or belittle the practice of just a headband, especially if the alternative is nothing. And I think, you know, when I grew up in America, many women that I knew who considered themselves Orthodox, modern Orthodox, whatever you, however you want to define it, they just didn't cover their hair at all. They
Right.
almost thought like, oh, this doesn't apply to us, you know, and like modern Orthodoxy had that like reputation of like, oh, you don't have to cover your hair if you're modern Orthodox. And today, in Israel, and I also see it even in America more and more, if there are women who, for whatever reason, they are not, you know, as fully committed, or the details are hard for them or whatever, but they are never leaving their house without some kind of scarf or headband, I personally am very, very moved by this, because I think the fact that they, A, want to show the world that they're married, and B, want to publicly identify as religious, both of those are extremely valuable things that, just because I may not think that that's the most ideal halachic approach, I don't think that halacha is all or nothing. And I certainly would never want someone to think that if they can't do all, that they should do nothing.
Right.
You know, the fachot said at least that. So while it is important for me to say that, I don't think, you know, if someone came to me and said, okay, I really want to be halachic and I want to do the halacha, but like, I'm really, really struggling. So tell me like the minimal thing that I could do and like check off the halacha box. I personally wouldn't feel comfortable saying a headband or like, you know, something just tied around the head is okay. If they're asking what's the minimal thing, I think I would say, you know, at least the majority of your head, your hair should be covered. But I think that I still would want to encourage someone who's like, well, I don't know if I could do that. I would want her to know that I think it's very significant for her to show that she's married and that she's religious.
Right,
And
exactly. And so many women want that. They wanted this mitzvah, but like we were saying at the beginning, it's hard. It's hard. In the summer months, it's hot. You know, who wants to wear something on their head, whatever, whether it's a baseball cap or some kind of a hat or a shetel or, you know, anything on their head. It's hard during the summer months. And also, a lot of women are in a rush when you're trying to get your kids to school and you know, you have to get them to hurry up, and then you have the pancakes burning on the stove, and you have to carpools outside, you know, like putting something on your head is like the last thing, you know, that you want to do, you know? So there is like, I just want to acknowledge that it is hard. I do cover my hair, and I'm being very honest. These are some of the challenges I face. And so I do wear a shetel. I'm wearing a shetel now. I wear a shetel when I can, but honestly, I put my hair up in a ponytail and I put a hat over my head. Like, it covers my whole hair, but I'm normally walking around the streets with a hat, which, you know, just because of what I said, like, I'm always in a hurry. I'm always going here and there and everywhere. I'm driving all around. I'm never in one place at the same, you know, I'm never one place for very long. So,
and halachically, that's certainly not considered less good halachically to cover your hair. The halacha doesn't seem to differentiate between a scarf or a hat or a sheitel. I mean, we could talk about sheitels more, as we will. But in terms of like the fact that this way or that way, all your hair is covered, I think, that's consistent.
Right. So then I was going to ask you, like, yes, because we are mostly talking about sheitels, but like, I understand that there's some Jewish groups that encourage women to wear wigs, but others discourage actually wearing wigs in favor of hair wraps, and some, I think it's just a techo or just something around the head that's not specifically not a sheitel. And I also want to clarify for people who are listening who are not familiar, some sheitels are wigs. So some wigs are made of actual human hair. Like, this is actual human hair that people get, and they, the Schädelmacher, which is the person who makes a schädel, makes the wig. And sometimes it's synthetic hair. It's fake hair. It's not real hair. It's like a synthetic wig. There's significantly less expensive as the synthetic wigs. But some groups say, like, not at all, whether it's a real hair wig or a synthetic hair wig, like, no wigs. And in favor of that, like a wrap or a techo or some kind of turban or whatever it is, just like not a wig. And I was always very curious about that. And I was just wondering why.
Okay, so wigs, sheitels, or in Hebrew they're called peyot, they're already mentioned in the Mishnah, which surprises people. It's not like something new from the 20th century. The peyot nachrit is already mentioned in the Mishnah. And again, as if you think that the idea of hair covering is to like cover her natural hair in some way, so common Ashkenazi practice is to permit wigs as a form of head covering. Even you could like grow out your own hair and turn it into a wig, which is pretty crazy. But like that is common Ashkenazi practice. Sephardi authorities differ, meaning they disagree. There's some as like the Kaf Chaim who freely permits them, but others, and I think this has really become popularized in the Sephardi world, Rav Avadia Yosef, who was a major Sephardi posig, so he did not permit wigs because he thought that they raised questions about modesty and he thought that they could give a false impression that a woman's head isn't covered. He also doesn't think that there's like a Masorah that this is practiced, this practice is supported by Sephardi custom. But even he would permit a wig in a specific circumstance, let's say such as a divorced woman who wants to keep covering her hair but wants to date or whatever, like he would permit it then. Ashkenazi poskim, including Rav Moshe Feinstein, were less troubled by the concern of marad ayin. Marad ayin is the concern of giving a false impression, and the reason that Rav Moshe Feinstein thought that it's a non-issue is because he said there's a general awareness that halachically observant women sometimes cover their hair with wigs. So he says, kind of, if you see, if you see a woman and you don't even know that she's religious or observant and her hair is, you don't think her hair is covered, so who cares? You didn't even know she was religious or observant. And if you know that she's religious and observant and you're like, well, how is she not wearing a hat? So then you could assume that she's likely wearing a wig. And he said actually that it's no different than men who shave their beards. He said, we know that there's a prohibition to shave with a razor. Men can't shave with a razor. But today there's such good electric shavers that the shave could be as good and close. And we're not worried, oh no, like here's this Ben Torah or this really firm person. And how could it be that he's shaving? Because everyone understands that there's a concept of an electric shaver that uses scissors, and that we're not worried that it's marred iron. So I often get the question from my students and, from women I talk to of like, okay, but Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote that 2 years ago before the sheitels that we have today. Like, come on, he didn't see the sheitels. He doesn't know how good the wigs are that are out there. Like, how could that be okay? Like, what, Shana, what if you really, really can't tell that I'm wearing a sheitel? So I heard something secondhand from others in the name of Rav Yitzchak Berkowitz, who's the Rosh Yeshiva of Esh HaTorah here in Yerushalayim. And it deeply resonated with me, and I find it to be helpful. So I'm hoping that I'm quoting it right and that I'm doing it justice. And if someone's listening saying she's got it wrong, so please, I'm quoting it in the name of people that I've seen write it up. But from what I understand, he explains, and this resonates with me, that really primarily a woman is covering her hair for herself. Meaning, really, primarily, he says the fact that she's now married and kind of her boundaries of tzniut have changed, and you want to call it like a loss of sexual naivete, or meaning she's entered an intimate world and she has a deeper kind of understanding of her power as a female. Or Rabbanit Chana Hankin says, you know, certain boundaries in terms of tsniut have come down in her life, so now maybe others go up. Okay, on all this, I always have the question, but what about the men? Like, they also, why don't they have? Okay, but we'll put that aside for now. But anyway, based on this line of reasoning, what he was saying is that it doesn't matter how natural it looks to other people, because it's not really primarily meant to be a physical statement to others as of to her marital status. It's really meant primarily to be a koja reminder for herself and how she conducts herself, and I'm married, and you know, and kind of her own boundaries in terms of that. And therefore he said, no matter how gorgeous or natural a sheitel looks, it's not her hair. And any woman who's ever had a sheitel on her head, it's a foreign object. And she knows that, and she doesn't forget that. And therefore, from what I understand, he's not concerned about women wearing sheitels, even if they're lace sheitels, or even if they look really natural. I personally really value his willingness to see this and this approach, because since you've said so many times already that the mitzvah of head covering could be so challenging, I think that it's important for us as a community to try to find ways to make it accessible and doable for as many women as possible, so that as many women as possible could keep this mitzvah and have positive feelings towards it. And for this reason, I think in so many communities, we see that there is an overall acceptance of sheitels, even though, again, not always in the Sephardic community and not always in every Ashkenazi community, not everyone feels comfortable with it. There are even communities, by the way, like Chabad, that actually insist only on sheitels. As you know, like you were saying, they think a sheitel is the ideal form of covering your hair, and many Chabad women have beautiful sheitels. And the reason is because of the Babitcher Rebbe, from Menachem Mendel Schneerson, said that a woman who wears a scarf on her head might take it off in certain cases because she's uncomfortable or she's hot. But a woman who's walking around in a wig, in his words, even if President Eisenhower himself walked in, you know, she would never remove it. Like, she wouldn't take off a wig, like, in front of anybody, because it's such a weird feeling. Like, what, she's taking off her wig. And therefore, yes, Chabad actually thinks that the ideal form of a woman covering her head is with the sheitel.
I find that so fascinating. I love that. I do find that fascinating. It's beautiful, though. Yeah. Yeah. But
yeah.
So, like, if a woman wants to now start covering her head, and she doesn't know when to, you know, how to start, where to start, what to do, how can we get women started who, like, really want to take on this mitzvah?
Okay, well, trying to think how best to approach this. The first thing I would do if I was talking to them is to be very, very validating, to be very validating of all the challenges or all the things that may have prevented them up until now, or all the things that they think are weird, or, like, you know, whether it's like the halachic questions of, like, is that really the source? Or it's like, I'm going to look different, or I'm going to separate myself, or I'm in a secular workplace and this is going to tag me as, you know, whatever it is. I think that first acknowledging that hair, as you said right at the beginning, is so tied into our personal identity as women. It's so tied into our self-expression. It's so tied into the way that we think of ourselves and present ourselves to others. Some people more, some people less. You know, some people have, like, beautiful curly hair, and, like, it's such a part of who they are. And other people, it's like, oh, my hair, whatever, I don't really care. But I definitely think that all of these things get mixed into our approach towards hair covering. And also then add on top of that, our feelings about our marriage. You know, someone may feel like, okay, like, until now I had this beautiful head of hair, and now because I'm getting married, and then, like, it could also get mixed up with, like, resentment. You know, you want to be so happy about getting married, but then when we're like, oh, I have to stop covering my hair. So it's like all mixed up together. I would try to help this woman, again, focus in on the meaning that hopefully she could find in this mitzvah, not with some feel good, superficial, it's going to be amazing, but, like, the meaning, and, like, it could be meaningful to really present yourself as a married woman. It could be meaningful to feel really committed to this mitzvah and to bringing God into your personal life, even if it doesn't always feel easy. You know, I feel that way also when I talk about Hilchot Nida, or well, things that are like very difficult sometimes, but it's like a way of showing that we really believe in bringing God even into the most intimate personal areas of our lives. I think there's meaning also in feeling part of a community of religious women and feeling identification with other people around that. I think there's meaning in terms of, okay, buying into a package deal, which is halacha, even if not every part of it always speaks to us. But then in terms of, okay, how do we help someone decide how to cover one's hair and how much to cover and all those things? So there I would ideally like to, as we're doing on this podcast, introduce someone to the halachic considerations, to the communal considerations of like what are the standards of the community that you're a part of, and to the personal considerations. And I think that all of those things need to be taken into account. Meaning, on the one hand, we want someone to make a decision after really understanding from the halacha from the inside and that she's doing something halachic. But I also want her to take into account, okay, the community that I affiliate with, and how do I want to be perceived, and will this be accepted? Because I could tell her, oh, there's a posek who says this, but if that's going to lead her to be ostracized in her community, she may make that decision, but she at least has to be aware of that, you know, when she's making it. So the communal factors, and then the personal factors of like, what do you think you're going to be able to feel good about, and what's going to be physically comfortable for you? Now, balancing all these parts can be challenging and can be difficult. And I, in general, try to really help people make decisions that they could get behind, that they could commit to, and that they could do besimcha and feel good about. Because when you do something that you feel like, I learned this and I understand it and I thought about all the different factors and I spoke it through with somebody that I trust and a mentor that I could be open with and who really understands me and where I'm coming from, and I understand the different options and I felt empowered to make a choice that's good for me, that's what's often going to help them be able to maintain their commitment to that. You know, my students know when I teach all these halachot to seminary age young women, both Israelis and Americans, and they know that I'm always teaching towards the long term. You know, I always tell them, listen, I could guilt you or make you feel fear and like kind of, you know, try to encourage from that place everyone to do the most machmer thing tomorrow so that like I feel good about myself as a teacher and could pat myself on the back and say, wow, look at all these young women you produced who all cover their elbow or who all do. But I'm not just interested in what they do tomorrow. I'm interested in, will they be able to remain committed to this 5, 10, 20 years from now?
Right.
And somebody is going to be able to remain committed, it's because they chose something from a place of commitment, but also a place of ratzon, of wanting to be committed. And that involves a lot of talking things out. Okay, so I'll give you an example that comes up for me with my students. Let's say I have a young woman who she's committed to covering her hair. Maybe she's even committed to covering all of her hair. And she's very, very halachic. But there's all these options out there today. Like, you know, there's hat falls. You could wear a hat and have a lot of your hair showing. It's not your hair. It's a shetel. But like, again, depends on the community that you come from. Before I made Aliyah, I wore hat falls because it was so clear to everyone around me that, of course, they know I cover all my hair. And of course, if they're seeing me in like a bandana and hair, of course, that's a shetel. But when I moved to Israel, and there's a lot of very halachic women that I know who cover the majority of their hair, but also leave out a good amount, all of a sudden I stopped wearing my hat fall, not because I don't respect their opinion. It's just not my opinion. I cover most of my hair and leave out a tefach. And I just realized like, oh, people aren't going to necessarily assume that that's a shetel, especially in Israel. So, you know, it's not, that's the halachic consideration. That was like a personal communal, how I want to be perceived consideration. And I often find myself in conversations with young women who are like, oh, you could buy today a shetel that's like a messy bun. you know, where you could buy a shaytel where you take out a little bit of hair in the front, and really there's no way to tell that it's a shaytel unless you assume that this person's wearing a shaytel. And I find myself often having conversations with women about, okay, there's the halachic piece. Halachically, maybe we could say 100% fine, especially given what I said from a Berkowitz. Like, yeah, you're checking off all your boxes, you know, your hair is covered. But now, can you own the decision you're about to make? What factors are important to you? Can you stand behind your choice? Are you going to be upset? Like, if someone thinks, oh, she's not covering all her hair, or how could she, you know, expose that? Are you going to be upset? You're going to say, whatever, I don't care. Let them think what they think. I know that I'm halachic. This is what's good for me. Just being able to like kind of think through your decisions and how they're going to impact you, and like know why you're doing what you're doing, those are the things that I have found to help people maintain their commitment in the long run. And if I was talking to somebody, I would really, really want to understand again, both how they see the halacha, who their poskim are, what community they come from, how that's going to impact on their decision, and what are their personal things. If someone says, well, I find every hair covering uncomfortable or itchy or whatever, whatever. And again, one last thing I'll say is that I'd rather, and I'm sure not everybody would agree with this, but I would rather someone do something that someone from the outside may say is a little less. Like, I'd rather her show a little more hair in a halachic way, but like get behind that and think that she's going to be able to maintain that, then kind of push her to cover all her hair. You know, sometimes there's this feeling of like, oh, I see she's wishy-washy about hair covering, so we better tell her, start her off to cover all her hair, because then if she like can't do it, so at least she'll end up covering some of her hair. And I think, whoa, that is so risky, because if she covers all her hair and she hates how she looks and she's so resentful,
yeah,
she may end up covering none of her hair.
Yeah,
I'd rather her cover some her hair in her way that feels good to her from the beginning, so that she could stand behind that and really feel connected from a positive place and from a place of simcha to this mitzvah.
I really love that. It's a really interesting approach. It's a beautiful approach. And I could see that being true for many other mitzvot, you know, not just hair
Absolutely.
Covering, but for many
this
other
is
mitzvot.
How I teach halacha in general. It's true, I teach all the really difficult topics like tzniut and kolisha and shmirat negiya and all those things. And in all
Yeah.
of these, I'm very much coming at it from that place. But even if I were to teach a class about how to make tea on Shabbos, and some people think you need a klish lishi and some people think you need tea essence, it's very important for me always to bring the range of opinions, because that's what helps people respect different practices, even if they don't do that practice. And because when I'm teaching a class of women, I never know who's sitting before me,
right,
what exactly is done in their family. It's also intellectually honest to not only bring the opinion that you do, but to like give people, you know, a sense of the topic. And also because you never know, again, if you're thinking about the long term, you never know where people are going to be 5 years from now.
Right.
So I could be talking to someone right now who's like, hair covering, not a big deal, no problem, covering all of it, I'm Kim Feet, I'm not even going to show, you know, any bit of it. But what if in 5 years from now, she's not feeling that way? I'd want her to know already from the get-go that there are other halachic options, okay? And the flip, if I'm talking to someone who's like, well, this is so hard, and I don't know if I could do this, and maybe I could only wear a headband, I'd want her to know from the get-go, right now, I know this is hard for you. And right now you're just getting married and you're at the beginning of your journey. And it may be really, really hard for you to take on more than this. But you don't know, over time, things may evolve and things may change. And therefore, I want you to know that there are this range of opinions. And who knows, maybe at some point later in time, you'll find yourself being able to take on something that right now seems, you know, unfathomable. And it's so important to give people, I think, that perspective when you're educating them.
Thank you. Yeah, that is very, very valuable. And I know that we're running out of time, but I have one question based on something that you said earlier, and I don't want to forget to ask it. You were saying that divorced women, some of them still cover their hair, even though they're divorced, they're not married anymore. And I know I've seen this, and I was just wondering if you can explain that a little bit.
Yeah, so the halakha of hair covering actually seems to kick in once a woman is married. And there are definitely explanations that really it's not the marriage so much as entering into a life of sexual intimacy because of the things that we discussed. So much so that maybe you've seen or you've heard that there's conversations about, does a woman have to leave her wedding with her hair covered? And it
Yes.
may be that halachically she does not. It could be. Again, there's different opinions about when you have to start covering your hair. That's why sometimes you'll even see someone wearing a shetel at her wedding, because it's like, does it start from the chuppah? Does it start from the chadar yichud? Or does it start only after a couple has been fully intimate? So there are opinions that think that head covering really only kicks in once a couple has been fully intimate, and it's connected somehow to that experience of, like, once a woman is kind of like an insider to the sexual experience and different boundaries have come down, so maybe other boundaries go up. And in that case, even after a woman is divorced, that would still apply to her. So the halakha from, like, the Ikar Hadin seems to say that a divorced woman would continue to cover her hair. The reason that sometimes we see that not all divorced women do that is because, if I'm remembering correctly, I think from Moshe Feinstein and others talk about, once a woman is no longer married, the d'oraita obligation of covering your head when you're married, like the Sota women that they learn from. So that clearly doesn't apply because she's not married. And the dat yehudit obligation, which is the minhag of tzniut, that's kind of the main obligation that's left on her. And because the dat yehudit obligation is drabanan, began in a minhag, if there's other pressing circumstances, like if there's going to be what's called like a hefse meruba, major loss, or, you know, she's not going to be able to date, no one's going to want to marry her if her hair is covered. And different communities, those are, you know, kind of relevant in different ways. If you live in a community where it's like barbor, if you're divorced, you cover your hair and any guy knows that and whatever, but not every community is like that. Or if you feel like you're not going to be able to get a job because you're headed, all these different things, where Moshe Feinstein says that when we're talking about a divorced woman, there's a lot more room to be matir and to be mekel to her not to cover her head at all, since the Torah obligation no longer applies. And I've seen this even in cases where, like, let's say somebody went through a very painful divorce, their marriage was very painful or abusive, and like any remnant of like that marriage would be very difficult for them and not easy for them to deal with. So even for emotional reasons, I've seen poskim be mekel in different cases that a woman maybe. In that case, it would be right to tell her that she doesn't need to continue to cover her hair.
Wow, thank you. Thank you so much for clarifying it, because I wasn't sure, because I've seen both ways. Some cover, some didn't cover. So thank you. I really appreciate you clarifying. And thank you so much, Ravani Chena, for being on America's Top Rebbetzins. We really, really enjoyed having you here. And hopefully this class will be for our Rafua Shleima for tomorrow Bat Elka, and to give enormous strength to the IDF soldiers, including Eden Bat Aliza, Eden Bat Orin, Eilat Bat Rachel, and Einav Ben Penina. Thank you so much again.
Thank you.